Thanks for listening to Dusty and Cam podcast, brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Center. Doing the right thing since 1952.
It's Football Friday on the Fan.
Block somebody!
This is a Football Friday edition of Dusty and Cam in the Morning with Dusty Hera and former All-American Cam Cleland.
Tapped by Coors Light. Duck fans, as you power up for game day, grab some frost-brewed Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer. Please drink responsibly.
Football Friday with Dusty and Cam on 1080.
We have great expectations.
The Fan.
All right, great football Q&A to start the show. Winner of an I'm a Dusty and Cam P1 t-shirt, our producer Ryan Buckley will be reaching out to you shortly, fine sir, because of the question that was asked on the Better You Today text line, the first hour winner.
Yeah, you guys always knock it out of the park. It's so much fun. Again, I say it every week. This is a blast. It's just because football's in our blood. It's deep in the blood. It permeates from me. It's like I smell like football all the time.
You do.
Did you like smell like, I mean, just sweating. Smells it?
You know, that is a gross smell, the locker room. I love it. You know when you walk into a locker room, you go,
yeah,
and you're just like, yes,
yeah,
I'm home.
It's weird.
It is weird because it's not a good smell.
No.
It's
and
like,
if you've never smelled it, you'd be like, oh, why would you ever do that?
It smells good.
Yeah. It's just dirty, muddy, musty,
yeah,
sweaty.
It smells like pre-wrap like and tape.
It's what it smells. It's just work. It just
smells
puts in,
like work.
It smells like working. Nostalgia.
Yeah, it's nostalgia. So this is great. I love it. I love it every week. Your football questions. I wish I could give everybody a t-shirt. Eventually we will.
Yeah.
Because every single P1 will be getting a shirt.
Yeah.
Eventually. Because you just keep asking those questions. But the winner goes to, can the current coaches on the Pac-12 make their teams relevant for the college playoffs? So congratulations. Yeah. It's a great question. I think we got good coaches here in this conference.
Yeah.
And the coaches can do more.
Yeah, and when that question was asked, I was like, and then you start writing down the names of guys who've done it, guys who've gotten pretty dang close to getting to the playoff or national championship game, and then it's half the conference. David Schock, Chris Peterson, Chip Kelly, Kevin Sumlin, they've been there. Kyle Whittingham, Mike Leach, gotten really close to being on the cusp of that top four conversation. So that's half your conference right there. All right, so we will have another winner. We'll do it again. We're just going to hit the reset button at 8 o'clock, and we're going to, boom, after weekend Would You Rather, roll right into more football Q&A. We'll give away another t-shirt on the Better You Today text.
Yeah, and if we didn't get to your question this time, roll it back in at 8 o'clock. Yeah. We don't have to do that, and we'll just come right back to it.
We have a big sports show like the rest of the way. So I got to get this question in now. Have you guys seen what KFC did?
No.
They unveiled it yesterday.
Not. Is this a free promo?
It sold out within a couple of hours. Would you want this in your home? KFC introduced a holiday fire log for your fireplace, which will make your house smell like fried chicken.
This goes
sign me up.
Yeah. It comes with a handwritten note from Colonel Sanders that says, when the weather outside gets frightful, just throw one of my logs on the fire, sit back and enjoy the delicious smell of fried chicken in complete cozy bliss.
Sign me up.
Yeah. Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah, I think Cam is very much on board with these food scents because you were also pretty excited about the Jimmy Dean sausage wrapping paper.
Jimmy Dean sausage wrapping paper.
God, you have a whole meat Christmas.
That's
Cam.
What's great about it. I can have
all, a meaty Christmas.
All those smells around me, but I don't have to consume it. So it's just the smells about it. It makes you smile.
And then you open up a wrapped piece of Hickory Farms summer sausage.
Oh, that's all good. Gosh, that all sounds really, really fantastic.
The meat sampler.
Uh-huh.
Right there. Have yourself a meaty little Christmas. All right. The KFC fire log sold out, but maybe you'll be able to get one later. It was not a publicity stunt like many thought.
Oh.
All right, tons of sports to get to. Let's get it going. Stuff Hunt, cool. 706.
What's hot?
Okay.
What's hot and why is it cool?
They're cool because they're hot.
Hot and cool with Dusty and Cam. Your morning dose of positivity ripped from the headlines.
Great story. Compelling and rich.
Brought to you on the Fan by Area Heating and Cooling. With more than 30 trucks in Portland and Vancouver, you won't have to wait on Area.
The Portland Trailblazers return to Moda Center after dropping a pair on the road to Memphis and Houston. Toronto is in town tonight, bringing the best record in the NBA to Rip City.
Okay. All right.
You know who
Saddle
else?
Up, baby.
You know who else Toronto's bringing?
Kawhi.
Former Oregon Duck, Chris Boucher.
Chris Boucher.
The Swatter Boy.
Swatter.
He has been promoted from the G League and will join the Raptors tonight. So just in time for the best team in the NBA, Chris Boucher is coming too.
All right.
All right.
Watch the Blazers win.
You know, tonight could be one of those games where they do win and that kind of saves everything. But if they get blown out tonight, you're going to be sitting there and you're going to start hearing cries from fans with tomorrow is the day where trades can be made official from players that were acquired this past offseason. So their cries are going to be starting to come with that. Trevor Ariza is expected to be moved. No rumors with him to Portland, but
only to the Lakers.
There's one other team that I heard, and I was like, actually, that's not bad. I can't remember what it was, but he's probably out. And we have more Suns news later in the show as well. There's been developments. Yes, they did win.
They won.
That team sucks. Jerry DePoto hospitalized with blood clots in his lungs at the winter meetings in Vegas, but that didn't stop him from completing yet another trade with the Tampa Bay Rays.
What? That sounds terrible.
Yeah, blood clots in your lungs?
In your lungs? Is he a... Wow.
I don't know.
Sounds awful.
I don't know what causes blood clots in your
lungs. That's terrifying.
It's very close to the heart where you die, you know?
That's no joke, man.
No, it's not.
Well, I wish him all the best. I don't even like hearing that.
Yeah. But he completed a trade and apparently is in good spirits. He was, like, doing it at the hospital.
Oh my God.
As the Mariners acquired Edward Encarnacion.
Yeah. We got Nelson Tampa. Cruz part two.
35.
I think he's 36.
Turning 36 this next season.
Right.
They unloaded Carlos Santana. Oh, RIP, Carlos Santana. If you ordered your Seattle Mariners Carlos Santana jersey, sorry.
See you later.
He only is here for 9 days before being dealt. But they get a draft pick now, which is what they wanted.
Is he going to be the next Santana? Going to be like Luke Rittenauer? Like seven trades
and Dan Dickow?
One season?
Buck, how many trades is this between DePoto and the Rays?
I read that this is the ninth trade love since fest. 2015 with
There's
this
a love
team.
Fest between... Huh?
My
huh?
goodness.
Soon it was going to be a I-5 rivalry because that Tampa team's going to be right here.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Nine times.
Guess what starts tomorrow?
Bowl season, baby!
Bowl season starts tomorrow!
Oh, that's exciting. It is.
You don't seem
that
excited.
And we get NFL, too. So yeah. Get a little bit of everything.
Don't my bowl season. I'm pumped. 10:30 a.m. The camping or the Auto Nation Cure Bowl at Camping World Stadium in Orlando.
Boom.
It's sponsor drop time.
Booyah.
Tulane,
big
Louisiana.
Camping World fan.
Hey, if you want to play our bowl pick'em challenge, go to 1080thefan.com and make your picks. I got to do that after the show. All of them.
All of them.
Because tomorrow you also have Utah State, North Texas. Where Gary Anderson will be creepily roaming the sidelines.
He'll be stalking, looking over his team.
Yeah. Do you know what the University of New Mexico Stadium is called?
University of New Mexico Stadium. I don't.
Dream Style Stadium.
What is Dream Style?
No idea. Well, that's why they named a stadium, so you'll Google
Dream
it now.
Dream Style. Sounds like sleeping in the buff.
Yeah. Well, hey-o. The Vegas Bowl will have Arizona State, Fresno State. That's a 12:30 kick.
Okay.
From Vegas, Georgia Southern playing Eastern Michigan. Literally have not seen a second of football from either one of those schools.
Okay.
And then Appalachian State, Middle Tennessee State in the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl, which you may scoff at that. That is always one of the most exciting bowl games of the year.
Yeah.
Mark it.
Yep.
It'll be exciting, even though nobody will know about it. So bowl season gets underway, and I couldn't be more excited. Seahawks got Doug Baldwin and KJ Wright back in limited capacity, both battling injuries ahead of their visit to San Francisco. Do you need them?
I think they probably take another week off, but maybe you want to have them get a few reps in if they're good.
Yeah.
Doug Baldwin's had a really rough year, man. He has not contributed at all. And if he does get healthy towards the end of the season to make a playoff run, that's monstrous for the Seahawks.
And next week just got that much more important for Seattle because Kansas City has a lot to play for still.
They do.
They're not going to be mailing
and
it in.
And that's the other thing, too. No. That mail-it-in crap, we don't want to hear that. Nobody as players wants to know that a team's coming into town. You want to play them at their best. Give me Kansas City. I want it.
Cowboys might be without Zach Martin as they visit the Colts. He's got a sprained MCL that continues to bother him. That's a big injury on the offensive line for
ouch.
Whatever they're called. Dallas?
Yeah, that would be the Cowboys.
That's it. The Chargers erased a 14-point fourth-quarter deficit in Kansas City to beat the Chiefs 29-28, taking their first and only lead with just 4 seconds to go.
Here's my question for you. Do you hate the Spanos family that much that you wouldn't be excited to see the Chargers make a run? And Phillip Rivers, I would love to see Phillip Rivers get a ring.
To answer your
question, Dan Marino combination of this young guy that's been in the league for so long, took over, and is just, he's doing something at 37 years old that's fantastic.
Yes, to answer your question, I do dislike the Spanos family that much.
But you don't hate the team, no? You can't just hate on the team. That team's doing it despite their crappy ownership.
Good point.
I love it.
Phil Rivers threw a touchdown and two-point conversion, both to Mike Williams. Here's a stat for you. 38 points of that game's 57 were scored by people with the last name Williams.
And a lot of Williams families.
Yeah. Mike. Mike, Damian, and Daryl all scoring in that game.
Yeah.
It is the second most in NFL history.
Would you say Williams and Johnson most popular last names in our country?
Smith.
Jones, Williams, Johnson, Smith.
Hera. No. It's the most by a single last name scored in a game since Ernie Never scored 40 by himself.
Well, think about how many Williams have been elite wide receivers.
Yeah, I know.
Good players.
But they're never like on the same team scoring in the same game or going like against each other, you know? That's a lot of points.
It is a lot of points.
The most common last name in the U.S. is Smith, 2.3 million people, followed by Johnson with 1.6 million people, then Williams.
Yeah, got them all.
Look at that.
Who's four? What's four?
Brown.
Is black and white?
Yeah.
Have you noticed that brown, black, and white are very popular last names?
Yeah.
They're just colors. They're like, what color's your hair?
Your top 10 in order are Smith, Johnson, Williams, Brown, Jones. Davis, Garcia, Rodriguez, and Wilson.
Oh.
Wilson!
We timed that on purpose.
And that's Hot and Cool on Fan. It's brought to you by Area Heating and Cooling. Right now, Area has great discount offers on qualified equipment from Trane. Start saving today at areaheating.com. The Chargers may be doing it despite the Spanos family, but it may be because of two very important people. Dustin Cam on the Fan. Okay, Cam Cleland, gun to your head right now. Who wins Coach of the Year? Matt Nagy, Anthony Lynn. Matt Nagy, Anthony Lynn, gun to your head.
Wow, it's very aggressive.
This is good. This is great radio.
It's Anthony Lynn.
I've got finger guns pointed at Cam.
It's Anthony Lynn. Look what he has to deal with compared to what Matt Nagy has to deal with.
Okay, Matt Nagy, though, took over a team that sucked.
No,
and they added Khalil Mack. That's kind of it.
Owners are better. Facilities are better. City is better. Fan base is better. It's got pretty good setup. Don't get me wrong. Chicago's got all the advantages. What do the Chargers have? Soccer stadium. Bad owners. Old guys, young guys, good draft, good coach. All the things that you have to do, you have to overcome so much more as a coach for the Chargers other than being in beautiful L.A. and the sun. The Bears, it's a tough choice between the two, but I would have to lean definitely Coach Lynn.
I would lean Anthony Lynn, but I'm not so sure. Like, I think San Diego or Los Angeles' roster is better. The Chargers have a better roster. Phillip Rivers, Melvin Gordon, Keenan Allen. You look at their offensive line with Russell Okung on the offensive line. If you take out the Hunter Henry injury, they've got a great tight end there. Joey Bosa, Brandon Mebane. Their defense is really good and has been good. I think their roster is, I mean, you almost go down everywhere. I mean, the Bears have a great running back in Howard, right? They've got a young quarterback, but unproven, in Mitchell Trubisky. Allen Robinson and Trey Burton. Those are your two best receivers, right, that you have? And then the defense, it was basically your defense from a year ago. But you get Roquan Smith, who you drafted, Khalil Mack, who you bring in through via trade. I mean, they've done Nagy's done a great job over there.
It's splitting hairs between the two. But I would like to see the finish of the season.
Yeah.
Who's been that coach that you would say, if I just asked 10 people randomly on the street and just walked down Portland and said, can you tell me the name of the Bears coach? Can you tell me the name of the Chargers coach?
That'd be very tough.
I bet you would get Nagy before you would get Coach Lynn.
Yeah, Anthony Lynn is a very inauspicious character. You know,
I love his less than one sentence answers.
Like this?
Everybody feels good right now. It's good to be in the playoffs, but we're not done. We want to win this division. So we got work to do, and now we're going to need a little help to get that done, but that's our goal.
I love guys that coaches that talk fast.
Yeah.
I do.
I don't know if he's really talking fast. That's a 9-second clip. I think if Buck were to take out the in the big gap, I think that's like 4 seconds of we're really excited. We want to win the division.
But he's not going to expand on anything.
I love
What more do you want from? He's like, what do you want from me? This is where we're at.
Yeah.
Going for two? Yeah, we're going for two.
We're going to do this.
You're dang right we're going for two.
Okay, I have one thing though, and the reason why I bring this up of Anthony Lynn and Matt Nagy, I think it is clear those two guys are your finalists for the NFL's Coach of the Year, correct? And I don't think it's really that. I mean, McVay and Andy Reid, they're in great years. Those two guys have done phenomenal jobs, right?
Certainly.
Or you give it to Greg Williams if the Browns went out. But the one thing that Anthony Lynn and Matt Nagy have, they have elite defensive coordinators. Vic Fangio. And do you know who the DC in LA is? The Gus Bus. Gus Bradley is the defensive coordinator for the Angeles Chargers.
Former Seahawks defensive corner, former head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
And he may have his shortcomings as a head coach. That guy can coordinate a defense, and he is doing a phenomenal job there. And both of those guys, Anthony Lynn is a defensive mind in background, but you look at both of those guys who are candidates for head coach of the year have got two phenomenal defensive coordinators who have a track record of being great coordinators in the NFL as well.
No question to me that in my mind that you got to have a little bit of defense, but you got to be able to have consistent defense towards the end of the year as you're getting better on offense. And if you're looking for teams, just find a way to really dive deep and look at the teams that are playing good, sound, fundamental defense towards the end of the year, not catastrophic mistakes. This isn't a hate on Kansas City because I really like Kansas City. That is a great football team. I respect Andy Reid as much as any head coach ever, and Patrick Mahomes is a prodigy. Their defense needs to sharpen up if they're going to make a deep run. Because if you're going to have to go, let's say they make a mistake and stub their toe. If they have to go on the road anywhere, okay, they're built to be able to handle it. But you got to know that your defense can stop somebody at some point. You got to get off the field eventually. For them to be up 2 touchdowns with that heading in there, that's got to be frustrating for Coach Reid.
No doubt about it.
Got to be frustrated.
No doubt. And that's kind of been the big problem that he's always had. Is that near the end of the years, his defenses, injuries have plagued them. It's always been kind of something different.
Yeah.
Andy Reid just has that, I don't know if it's a curse or whatever.
Yeah.
It's
hard to win.
Wheels fall off at the end of the year. Wheels fall off at the end of the year. Okay, we always break a little bit early in this situation because we've got Joel Klatt coming up next. He is a Fox Sports college football analyst. He joins us every Friday at 7:30, and we will get him on the horn next to talk bowl season, college football expansion, which he tweeted about and talked to us about a few weeks ago. It's making national headlines today. And how do you regain power from the SEC? Joel Klatt, Fox Sports college football analyst, next. But first is Sir Ryan Patrick Buckley with SportsCenter. All right, we're still waiting on hearing back from Joel Klatt. Supposed to join us every Friday at 7:30.
I set a reminder on his phone for him. No, I didn't.
Yeah. When would you have done that? When you guys were cuddling?
Legally tapped into his phone to do that. Like I said, he's not in the Midwest.
Did you want to hear what I believe?
What? Drop the kids off?
No, I think he's on vacation.
Oh, might be on vacation.
He has not tweeted in a couple of days.
I think you're right.
So he's probably getting away before he has to do a bowl game.
Yeah.
You know? Well, do we want to mock Joel Klatt's top five Christmas movies that he tweeted out?
We can mock that. We can mock his top tweets. We can argue those tweets.
Do you want to play the fun game of who does Joel Klatt follow on Twitter?
Well, we have our questions. You have your questions. We could just go through those questions and answer back and forth.
As
and
if we're Joel Klatt?
Yeah, we could just do that. I have a couple things and thoughts.
Okay. Well, I also have NFL stuff too.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't need Joel Klatt. No. I've got plenty of stuff that we want to go through. So you want college football or you want NFL?
Why not go both? Rapid fire.
All right. What are your questions that you have for Joel?
All right. So one of my questions is going to be, if I put Kyler Murray, Tua, Dwayne Haskins, Will Greer, and Justin Herbert right in front of you to start your franchise, and you had that opportunity to say, this is the guy I'm going to take that's going to carry me to the next level in the NFL, who are you going to take to lead your franchise and why?
If it's not Kyler Murray?
No, Kyler Murray's one of those. He's going to play. This is a hypothetical situation. I'm going to pick from Kyler Murray, too. You have the first pick in the draft. Every single one of these guys are coming out. They've lined up. They're standing in front of you. Okay. You get a chance. Kyler Murray, Tua, Dwayne Greer, and Justin Herbert. Who are you taking realistically to lead your franchise?
Oh, boy. That's a really good question. That's tough. Not Will Greer.
I don't want to hear why you don't want those guys. I just want one and why.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to go Tua.
Okay.
I'm going to go Tua.
And why is that?
He's a playmaker.
Yeah.
He's won, obviously, with an immense amount of talent at Alabama. But he's got that it factor that you see being successful. Patrick Mahomes has it. Baker Mayfield has it right now. Mm-hmm. And he's not that self-centered. He's a lot like Patrick Mahomes. He's that gunslinger mentality. Mm-hmm. He's risky, but coachable, right?
But he's left-handed.
Yeah, I know. It's okay. We can get our left-handed biases away from him.
There's only been one lefty that's ever made anything that I consider as a legit lefty. And don't tell me Jim Zorn. Steve Young.
Okay, well, he was pretty good.
I'm just kidding. I'm not a bias towards lefty.
A bias towards lefty because you had a left-handed court. Brock Huard's a lefty, isn't
Brocky
he?
Is a lefty.
And
his ball spun the wrong way, man.
Okay.
It was very awkward to catch.
Hey, what about...
Don't tell me Boomer Esiason.
No, Boomer Esiason is a left-handed quarterback.
I know that, but that's what I'm saying.
What about Mark Brunell?
Mark Brunell's very good.
Steve Young.
I already said Steve Young.
Welcome to
the conversation, 49er Homer.
What about the hefty lefty...
Oh, Jared Lorenzen.
Pillsbury Throw Boy.
Matt Leinart, probably not making my case. Yeah, Tim Tebow, probably not making my case. Michael Vick.
It's good. It's good. We're talking.
Westland Zone, Cade McNown.
Yeah. All right. How you doing right there?
Kenny Stabler.
Ooh, not bad.
In your face.
Yeah.
And he's from Alabama.
He is from Alabama. I'm still taking two of myself. I think he's the best of everything. He's got the feet. He's got the mindset. He's got the learning ability. He's got the moxie. He's got the arm strength. Mm-hmm. He's not your 6'5 elite guy back there, but he's going to play. I mean, he's not small. He's 6'1, almost 6'2. He's not like a little dude. Okay, he can still play. So I'm taking that. I also would do that if I had my chance.
Okay. Do you want to? So I'm on this Wikipedia page of list of left-handed quarterbacks, and it has like all of these different categories for it, like, you know, year of birth, year of death, professional career, teams played for, and then it has notes of accolades, right? Mm-hmm. Bobby Douglas for his notes, and you know, it's like Kenny Stabler, Super Bowl champ, 4-time Pro Bowler, MVP, All Pro. Bobby Douglas, 1-time holder of numerous NFL quarterback rushing records.
Nice.
Scott Mitchell. 1-time holder of numerous Detroit Lions passing
records. I played golf
with
Scott Mitchell. Pretty good golfer. Good guy.
Jared Lorenzen, nicknamed the Hefty Lefty.
The Hefty Lefty. It's Steve Young and everybody else, guys. I mean, that's just kind of how it works.
Kellen Moore, last known left-handed quarterback in the NFL.
Is that true? Think about that. Is that true?
Yeah, he was in 2017. It was just last year.
Last year.
No, it's not a distinguished list of left-handed quarterbacks to play. But it is a real thing, though. You mentioned it when you initially said, but he's left-handed. It's different catching a pass from a left-handed quarterback.
Way different. Those of you that have never done it, it does. The ball spins at you at a different angle. And instead of how it always feels like the right-handed quarterback throws the ball and the nose comes at you straight.
Yeah.
The left, it's open. It's like 15 degrees open to you, and it's spinning the opposite direction.
You know,
so your hands, and it is different. I'm telling you, it's weird.
You know
but
why?
It's different.
You know why you feel that way is because we're so used to catching balls from a right-handed quarterback time and time again.
Yeah.
Like a kick and like a punt.
Mm-hmm.
A football pass actually tails.
Yeah.
Right? It fades off.
Yep.
But when you're running a route, you're so used to it that it feels normal. The left-handed quarterback, the passes tail a different way. So when you're being led by a quarterback, it feels like the ball's turning into you and not away from you. It's true. It'll blow your mind when you catch from a lefty. It's very odd.
All right. So we established mine. What you got?
My first question was, how do you take power back from the SEC? Mm-hmm. And we have already discussed that. Through the course of this week and what the Power Five conferences need to do in order to do that. And then my other question was, the Pac-12's bowl season, how important is it for 2019 what they do to end the 2018 season? Because it is amazing to me how long the Pac-12 1-8 in bowls has stuck to the conference. Isn't it amazing how long that has been a stigma surrounding it, the 1-8? And so this bowl season seems important.
It means a lot to Pac-12 corporate down in San Francisco. It means a lot to Larry Scott. It means tremendous amount to the national narrative that everybody is going to look at the Pac-12. And if you continue to play bad, they might just say, hey, Pac-12, you better join the Big 12.
No, it would never
do that. Everybody needs a sorry conference. So at this point in time, the Pac-12 is the bottom. It's the armpit.
Yeah.
That's sad to say, and that's maybe a little bit harsh of me to say that, but it's the realistic point. If you have another bad year of bowl games and your top teams get their butts stomped, it's not a positive look, certainly for the conference at all.
Well, and we mentioned this earlier, but there are matchups that are favorable to the Pac-12 as we look at it on the surface and heading in. There shouldn't be a litany of excuses that are going to be used. This first game, though, no matter what happens with Arizona State, if they lose to Fresno State, it will be a black mark, despite the fact the best player for Arizona State won't be playing in the game, in Keel Harry, who's sitting out.
And that's unfortunate, too, because if you're a Pac-12 team, you're a Power 5 team that's in a big-time conference, you immediately have the benefit of having that.
Yeah.
So Joel just got back to me, and he's going to be ready to go at 7:45.
All right.
So we might just jump out of here early.
That is in 5 minutes from now, and we've got a commercial break, and we'll get right back to Joel Klatt, Fox Sports college football analyst, better late than never, joining us next on The Fan.
It's time for Fox's top college football analyst.
Klatt with a play action, going to go long, and he's got a man there.
The inside story on college football without the SEC homerism.
I'm going to get it like a bull in a china shop.
This is Fridays with Klatt, part of Dusty and Cam in the Morning.
Can you find out if Dalton Ferguson was named after Dalton from Roadhouse?
I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that.
Thanks, Joel.
Sorry.
Appreciate you.
Brought to you on The Fan by 808, the Titan of Hawaiian restaurants.
All right, joining us as always on the Catlin Capital Hotline is Fox Sports College football analyst Joel Klatt. Good morning, Joel. How are you?
Doing great. What's going on, man?
You know,
we thought you were on vacation. Are you on vacation?
Yeah.
You taking a little time off?
I mean, wrangling two kids that need to go to one to first grade and the other to preschool. That's a vacation.
Time of
what
life.
Did I tell you? That's what I'm telling you. Is take care of the kids in the morning.
Time of your life.
It's important.
Okay, Joel, the Open says without the SEC homerism, so I'm going to come out and ask. We've been talking about it this week. You mentioned on the show a couple weeks ago that you've been hearing from people that expansion to college football playoff to 8 is something that you've been hearing chatter about. The Athletic writes that big article this week, and the SEC is saying, well, we're not getting rid of our conference championship game, and it seems like everybody's willing to fold. What do the other, if there's one thing besides just beating them on the field, what can the other Power Four conferences do to take some of that power back from the SEC to where they stop bullying everybody around into decisions?
Have a backbone in your majority. That's what I would say, because there is a majority.
Right.
There are, you know, more people power brokers within the sport that want to move that direction. And all they have to say is that, hey, we're going to do it with or without you. And they're too afraid to do that because they feel like they need the SEC. And the SEC feels like that those folks that are in the majority need the SEC more than the SEC needs them. The SEC is incredibly short-sighted. Their value of their conference championship game is the highest of any conference out there. There's no doubt. However, it's not as valuable as what a quarterfinal weekend would be, even to them in particular. They're trying to kind of like hoard that value, but what they don't see is that owning, and I've told you guys this how many times in regards to the Pac-12, owning 100% of $50 is much different than owning, you know, 25% of $450. Mm-hmm. So I personally think that it's going to get to a point where the SEC will fold only because someone's going to show them the dollars and the economics, and they're going to say, and they're going to show them that, hey, your championship game, while valuable, is actually losing you money. So it always comes down to dollars and cents. The rest of college football knows that they can't get the value out of a playoff unless the SEC is included. The SEC right now, I think short-sightedly, thinks that they're going to continue to make the money that they want to make without a quarterfinal weekend. It's a big tug of war, and right now everyone just kind of cedes to the SEC, and it's not just the success on the field. I think it's more about the fact that the SEC knows that they're incredibly valuable from a television perspective, and they don't budge off of that.
Yeah, and that's kind of the one thing that we are talking about this week as this conversation is happening is, why don't the other Power Four conferences just go to the SEC and say, fine, keep your conference game, but you're going to have to conference title game, but you're going to have to move it up a week, and we're not going to play one, and it could hurt you if your best two teams are playing in it. And then just play it that way and say, go ahead and keep it. We're just going to do our thing and have an advantageous schedule for us instead of the way you've been playing it with eight conference games.
They won't do it. They won't agree to it. They won't be in the system. And that's the issue. The SEC is never going to put itself behind the eight ball, ever.
Right.
Ever. It's not like the other conferences. The Pac-12 puts itself behind the eight ball constantly with their scheduling and everything that they do. And the SEC is not going to do that. The SEC came kicking and screaming into the playoff. The reason the playoff is so flawed is because of that conference, because the rest of college football had to make so many concessions to the SEC just to get them in the game. That's why we have this ridiculous figure skating style judging contest at the end of the year. You really think that all these smart minds got into a room and said to themselves, you know what's best for the sport? If we just take the four best teams in a subjective sense and take them to the playoff. No, nobody thought that was the best way. Give me a break. But that's the only way the SEC would go. Why? Because in their mind, why would they leave the BCS system when the BCS had been so good to them? Got a two-loss LSU into the national championship. Got a non-champ Alabama into the national championship. They had just won how many straight national championships? Outside of Florida State, I think it was like eight of the last nine BCS national championships. So the SEC was sitting at the table like, why are we budging? You know, like, y'all right. Crazy. You know, and so all of a sudden, all these concessions were made. What is not public, and I can tell you guys, is that the system, the college football playoff system, actually gave the SEC $4 million more dollars per year to grandfather them in over the first 4 years of the college football playoff. This is the first year that it's actually an equal revenue split between all the Power Five conferences because of the college football playoff. They had to give them a concession of $16 million over 4 years just to get them involved. And they had to acquiesce to that ridiculous standard of best versus most deserving and conference champions. All of that. So if we go to eight, just keep in mind right now, it ain't going to be smooth. All right? So if it does expand, the stuff that's going to be given to the SEC, both behind closed doors and even out in the open of how this system is actually going to go, is going to be awful. I'm just letting you guys know that. So everyone that's like, this is an easy fix, it's easy to do it right, it's not going to be right, because one of the leagues has an inordinate amount of power in this negotiation.
Is it better, Joel? I mean, overall, though, if I was a devil's advocate, I mean, is college football good because of the – now, this is not how I feel, but the crazy subjectiveness of fan bases of saying my team's better, this guy's better, and this – is that why college football still holds on to it so much, because of years and years of – vote. Remember, national championships were given before the bowl season even happened in a time in college football. Is going to eight really going to be better?
I think that that's part of it. I think that that can drive conversation, but I don't think that that's what makes college football special. I think that we as humans have an innate sense that we want to belong to something. And college football allows us to belong in a more intimate fashion than even professional sports, because we feel it, we sense it, we lived it. It's a part of us, right? It's a part of the fabric of who we are if we went to those schools. And so we feel almost like a part of the family. It's like going to Thanksgiving dinner or Christmas Eve with your extended family. And it's just, you know, we might hate it at times, but it's what we know and we love, right? It's where we belong. And I think that's what makes college football so special, is like, go to all of these stadiums and you walk into these stadiums and it's kind of like a giant family. Us against them, we're part of the fabric of this university and this program. And you don't get that sense at a corporate and stale environment in an NFL stadium. And so I happen to think that that's what makes college football so great, versus the fact that at the end we all yell and scream about which team we think is better, and we're allowed to do that because the system is flawed and the schedules are incredibly insufficient at giving us some sort of standard of who's better than who.
Yeah, and you know, with what you said about the distribution over the first 4 years of the college football playoff, I mean, it's insane that if the people in the room knew that, right, who were on the committee and making selections, like, an SEC bias is legitimate when they are literally telling them they're more important than the other four conferences that are in the conversation here. Like, that's exactly what you're doing, is you're saying you are so much more important, you deserve extra money so you can change your mind and join us. And how that doesn't affect the way that a committee operates or that the college football playoff as a whole operates, that's amazing to me. And it's not to say that Alabama isn't deserving of being in, but how can that not change the way that you select the teams and weigh the schedules, in a sense?
Yeah, weighing the schedules is a big part of this. You know, I happen to think that there are small little fixes that we're never going to get to, because it would knock the chance of a second SEC team getting into the playoff, and they're never going to agree to something that would not allow two of their teams to go and compete for the national championship. Right. So that's kind of where we're at this point. You know, and again, I'm not a fan of the 8-team playoff just in general. I don't think that it's best for the sport. I don't think it retains the value of the regular season. I understand I'm in the minority in that. I think that there are some small fixes that we could do with the current system that would make it better than an 8-team playoff, and also give more of the access that people are yearning for to more teams around the country.
So finally, before we let you go, your vote last week, you kind of dropped a little bit on us. You did pick Kyler Murray. I'm assuming that was your choice. I thought it was the right choice. Mm-hmm. It's who I thought won the Heisman, and deservedly so. I'm going to put together a quick quarterback list, and you being a quarterback and understanding value moving to the next level, this is just a hypothetical situation, but if you took Kyler Murray, Tua, Dwayne Haskins, Will Greer, and Justin Herbert as a group that were really going to go to the NFL draft. Now, I know Kyler's going to play for the A's, but if you had that opportunity, who would you start your franchise with knowing that I want a guy that can translate to the NFL and maybe be the guy that would lead me to a Super Bowl potentially?
The current NFL, I think I would rank them like this. I would say Tua would be my first pick. Dwayne would be my second. I would probably take a Kyler Greer combination, and then Herbert after that.
All right. So Justin Herbert coming back for another year then. Joel Klatt breaking that news. Want to do that?
I'm not sure if he will or not. I do think that this is an incredibly weak class of quarterbacks, and it behooves you as a quarterback with any amount of value to leave when there is a weak class, you know, a thin class. And I personally think Justin should leave, but that's more of a monetary situation and a value situation versus the reps. If you were to ask me what prepares you best to succeed in the NFL, I would always tell you to stay in school and get more reps. If you're going to ask me, like, well, what about just maximizing your value at the time in which you have it to go to the NFL draft, then I would say as soon as you have the value to be in the first round or the top 15 picks, you go immediately. So the fact that those are two different answers, I think, is what makes this such an interesting and tough decision for these players. I think I don't envy Justin Herbert's decision. I know that sounds crazy because you're like, what do you mean? You can either be a star quarterback in the college football ranks or you can go and be a top 15 pick in the NFL draft. Yeah, I get it. Both options are good. But at the same time, he's going to be scrutinized an awful lot on each side of those. And so we'll see what he does.
When it comes to the bowl games, Joel, Gardner Minshew just mentioned, he said that, you know, you got guys all around you. I would never skip a game. They're fighting their tails off. Coaches, you need to be out there one last time. Would you tell these guys to skip bowl games if it was a factor in choosing the NFL and getting ready for the NFL in their career?
It's a good question. Okay, so there are only a few players in the country that I feel like have established their value and it's not going to change for the NFL draft. Everybody else, every time they step on the field, is impacting their value, whether they are choosing to be on the field or choosing not to be on the field, and then their performance once they are out there. If you are still a player that can affect his draft stock in a positive sense, I think you should always go play because the tape is the great equalizer. A guy like Will Grier, I think, should go play because I think he's a fringe first-round guy. So, like, what are you retaining? If you go and show out in the bowl game, maybe that's the film. Maybe you make one of the throws that increase your value 10 picks, 15 picks, 20 picks in the NFL draft. You never know when that opportunity is going to arise. His body of work, I don't think, has solidified him in any spot in the draft. So now he's leaving it up to chance. If you're a guy like Nick Bosa, I'm like, man, what have you got to prove? You know, like you're solid. You're good. That's why I think that this whole conversation, there's always going to be too many kids skip their bowl games. There's going to be too many kids leave early. And they just don't quite understand what's going on in that value proposition. For me, I think it's only a few guys out there that I would say, yeah, you should probably not play in your bowl game. But that's strictly a sense of an individual value proposition and what that individual's value is to the NFL and how they can impact that. That's aside from the commitment to your teammates and that issue.
All right, Joel, what bowl game are you on?
The Holiday Bowl.
Oh, look at that. The Holiday Bowl. You got a little Pac-12 action. Your first Pac-12 game of the year. Congrats, man. It only took
first West Coast game of the year. I saw Pac-12, one of the executives at a bowl event. I was down in San Diego and he was like, hey, how many games did you do? And I was like, I didn't do one. And he was like, you didn't do a Pac-12 game? I was like, sorry, Broseph. No,
he doesn't do it.
You call the Pac-12 exec Broseph? Yeah, I love Broseph. That.
Yeah. They must be on real good terms.
I mean, after this year, they deserve it.
Hey, and finally, you had Christmas Vacation as number one. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? Yes or no?
No, that's why I didn't put it on there.
What?
Die Hard is an action movie takes place around Christmas. It's not a Christmas movie.
It's at a Christmas party. Santa was there.
No, this is insane. It happens to be a Christmas party. The same movie could take place whether it was Halloween, Thanksgiving, Easter, whatever holiday.
It would have been a great Easter movie then.
Every movie that I listed depends on the holiday of Christmas.
I love your list.
You see?
Yeah, I know. Like, I'm right there.
People kept saying, like, Die Hard. I'm like, no, Die Hard's just a movie.
Yep.
Die Hard lives whether Christmas is there or not. My list, every one of those movies depend on Christmas.
Right, see? Boom. It's like how I sit with Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Thanksgiving. But it works. It works, see?
I don't know.
Dusty's bitter. He's like, oh, I can't handle this.
No, it's a Christmas movie.
It is.
It's not a Christmas movie.
Joel, it is.
Okay.
It is. Now that you think it is, if you want to include it in a Christmas movie conversation or ranking list, you must pay me $4 million every year for 4 years.
Well, we already do to have you come on the show every single week, right?
What more does this guy want?
Joel, thank you very much, man. Always appreciate your time.
Thank you, my man.
See you guys.
Joel Klatt, Fox Sports college football analyst on the Catlin Capital Hotline every Friday at 7:30. Yes. Brought to you by our friends at 808, the titan of Hawaiian restaurants. All right, it's always awkward, often offensive, and exceedingly entertaining. It's our weekend. Would you rather next on The Fan?